Today's episode of The Right Time is brought to you by Hims. Guys, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. I know I lost mine before then, and yeah, it was a big problem. Thing is, once you notice the hair loss, it's too late. Easy to keep the hair you've got than replace hair you've lost. I mean, come on, how are you going to feel a year from now if you look up and it's business as usual up there? You can't just let your hairline do the moonwalk on you when you can turn to medicine and science. And there's a solution. It's for Hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims will connect you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. They got well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions that help you keep your hair. None of those crazy pills from the gas station. Is prescription solutions that are backed by science. Don't have to go to a doctor, be awkward waiting in the waiting room. You can save hours going to forhims.com. You just answer a few quick questions and a doctor will review and can prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. Now order now. My listeners get a free trial of Hims for just $5 today, right now while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/Bomani. That's forhims.com/Bomani. forhims.com/Bomani. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. Coming up on this episode, damn, one more for Tom Brady? Okay, Boogie Cousins is back in the NBA. Hey, we'll talk about Firefest too, but first... Guys, it's been a very interesting couple of days for me. You know, I personally have been embarking on what I consider to be a very important mission, work that matters a lot, which is basically saving a major American city. Now, I understand that sounds particularly ambitious to a lot of you, but to me, it sounds like another day at work, man. Sometimes when you like who I am and you got the platform that I got, what you can do sometimes is like focus on things that are bigger than you, that are larger than you, that go beyond your little simple concerns and issues. You understand what I'm saying? And for me, it's never simply about me. It's about y'all. It's about us. It's about y'all and us. It's about everything. It's about the world. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not the selfish guy that I think a lot of you guys would expect for me to be. Not me. No, sir. I'm here for everybody. And I'm trying to explain this to you. Everybody is better off with the Saints not being in the Super Bowl. And I understand that if you are a person who is from New Orleans, you are probably saying, we're not better off with the Saints not being in the Super Bowl. And you're right. But if I'm going to be honest with you, it ain't really that many of y'all. The city ain't that big, right? Again, you got to think about something that's bigger than you, something that's larger than you. And I understand a lot of folks from New Orleans, man, y'all don't even know nothing about Slidell. I get it. And I'm not throwing that as simple shade. Y'all know I'm correct about this fact. You know, yeah, I mean, I know a lot of y'all. My daddy from Louisiana. I've been around the block. I know how it goes, man. So think about the world that is outside of your parish. Think about what's going on everywhere else. Think about the jerks that y'all was set to be if y'all had gone to gone to Atlanta and made it to the Super Bowl. Y'all know y'all were going to be jerks. And I know that y'all were going to be jerks because the Falcons fans are all being jerks to y'all right now. And you can't only be so mad about it because you know that you would be bigger jerks about it. In fact, you realize the jerks that y'all were about the 28-3 situation. Y'all know what all of that is. The world is a better place without y'all showing up in Atlanta. In fact, I understand this part too. Some of y'all already going to come to Atlanta. Some of y'all had already booked your travel. Some of y'all already got your stuff. And I hope that when y'all get there, y'all will have gotten over what has happened. So y'all not coming and bringing all your anger and your scorn and your negativity to bring down what should be a very entertaining week for many people. It's the Super Bowl. It's almost like a national holiday. It's a big deal. It's happy. It's fun. And y'all mad. Y'all real mad. And I don't want you to be mad anymore. That's a lie. Gabe, I love them being mad.
Doing the Lord's work right here.
Oh, yeah, but man, I'm not even going to lie, man. I was at my homeboy's house watching the game. and I'm just kind of watching it. Like, by the time I settled in there, I think it was either 3-0 or 6-0. The Saints had squandered opportunities to put up points. It looked like the Rams were going to get blowed out. You know, they just didn't seem to have it in them. Jared Goff didn't look like he had the constitution and temerity to get the team through, you know. So I'm watching the game, and it's looking pretty good for the Saints overall. By and large, it's looking all right. And then we get down to the end, you know, right before that one play. And I didn't know what Sean Payton was doing, to be honest, man. There was no way in the world that that should have gotten to where it was. And the Rams had two timeouts, and the Saints ran three plays. The Rams came out of that with a timeout and with a bunch of time. That never should have happened. Like, that part is on Sean Payton. Now, maybe he was just so sure that that pass play he called that was sending Tommy Lee Lewis up the sideline was going to work, right? Like, maybe he was just so positive of that that there was no real concern about what the outcome was going to be on that. They were just so sure they get the first down, then everything would be okay. Maybe that's it. But Sean Payton did not really do his team that many favors. I figured they had enough dudes where they should have been able to figure out a way to run that ball three times, if for no other reason than just to bleed out the clock. They were in a place to do that. Payton gets to skate on that right now, in large part because people are so furious about, you know, the pass interference call. Gabe, I'm sure you have seen this play by now if you did not see that play live. Is that the worst pass interference call you have ever seen?
I would say so. I think also, like, what is an indicator of the hilarity of how bad it was is the fact that Roby himself chalks it up to be a awful call.
Yes. That is my favorite thing in this. Nobody is even trying to pretend. Yeah. Right? Nobody is trying to rationalize. Nobody's on some, like, oh, well, you know, you just gotta abide by what the refs do sometimes. You know, like, nobody's trying to turn this into some bigger lesson, a big metaphor, or nothing like that. The Rams are like, damn, that was pass interference. Which, of course, has to make you even more furious if you're the Saints. Or if you're a Saints fan, it has to, it especially fears if you bringing that nonsense to me, right? I don't even know why they trying to argue with me. I am telling you that I am trolling you, right? I'm not trying to pretend like what I'm doing is anything other than what it is. I don't root for the Falcons no more. I am off that narcotic, but I have been clear about the fact that I ain't never rooting for the Saints, and every now and then might root against the Saints. And I was sitting in there watching that game. And when it came to the kick in overtime, I think it was 57 yards. And I sent a tweet that was like, I wouldn't kick a 57 yard field goal. And I wouldn't have, right? Even with them making it, I wouldn't have done that. Just because of the way the Saints offense was playing at that point, I felt like they could have boxed them boys in back there. You just got an interception. You could have boxed them boys in and you'd have been in better shape than trying to kick a 57 yard field goal. Especially after homie kicked that crazy little knuckler to take him into overtime, right? So they line it up. That snap comes, man. He put that ball down for 57. Gabe, he kicked the hell out of that ball. That would have gone through from 67. That would have gone through from 77. He kicked the hell out of that ball. And I am 100% ashamed of my reaction when that kick went through. You wouldn't have just thought I played. I mean, I rooted for the Rams. You would have thought I played for them. You would have thought I was a Ram.
The world. You would have thought you was a Ram?
You would have thought I was a Ram. Not just any Ram, by the way. You would have thought I was Greg Zuerlein, Legatron himself. I was like, yeah!
Not just any Ram. You would have thought he was the Ram.
The Ram. That I was the hero of the moment. But that was simply because I wanted to save a city. That was all. It's going to be tense enough in there with the TSA situation looking like it's probably going to shake out unless this government thing going to change anytime soon, which I doubt that it will. By the way, Gabe, did you see like 10% of TSA called out of work on Sunday?
Oh, yes, I did. 10%. I mean, the glad handing and the back patting of the TSA agents is appearing not to be quite enough when they've been 1 month without pay.
No, yeah. You're doing a good job. Thank you for your service. They ain't trying to hear that now. Right? And it's only going to get worse. Like, unless they start cutting checks, nobody's coming back. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's like, however bad it is right now, it can only get worse in the absence of the government opening back up. It can only be more people leaving work. It's not going to be anybody that's going back. right? So it's going to be tense in town. And I just didn't want that. And, you know, I sent a couple tweets. You know, I sent a picture of a paper bag. I told the Saints that, and this is when they really got mad, Gabe. This apparently got retweeted by somebody from New Orleans, and they took it real personal. And I was like, look, man, based on these tweets that I'm seeing out here, we don't need your negativity in town. Stay where you are. You understand what I'm saying? Gabe, they so mad at me. They're like, what a terrible quote. One guy, he and I had to wind up making some peace with things. And he was like, yeah, well, guess what? It's Martin Luther King Day. And, you know, we in Louisiana are going to celebrate, you know, because the Southern Christian Leadership Conference is founded in New Orleans. And we're going to celebrate Martin Luther King and all of that. And I responded and I said, that's beautiful. But Gabe's name happened to be Lamar. So I sent that with hashtag White Lamar. And he don't know what we do. You know what I mean?
He doesn't get the show.
Yeah. It's not his fault. He just didn't know. He was unaware. And so that like took him to another place. Like people were just mad at me. Let me find, here's what I said. And I think, I mean, was this real? I need you to tell me, was this really bad? You know, like was this something that people should have really gotten their feelings hurt and the way that they got their feelings hurt? Now, granted, some of these people, I was like, whoo, boy, I was really, really taking it to them. Like I was taking it right to them. I was telling them how happy I was to see them hurt. I was telling people, talk to your friends. You know what I'm saying? Like, all I'm going to do is make them feel worse. If you got a friend that feel this way, tell them not to come at me because I'm not going to make it any better. And here's what I said, Gabe. The anger in some of you Saints fans, quote tweets, reaffirm how correct I was in saying the city of Atlanta didn't need your negative energy. Thank the Rams and the rest for keeping people safe. It's bigger than football sometimes. Think about more than yourselves. They couldn't handle that.
It comes with the territory.
They couldn't handle that. They couldn't handle that, man. This one dude, I'm just reading my timeline. He's like, you damn Skippy, I'm mad. I do not think the better team won. I do not know what bots you talked to, but I'm mad that the refs missed something that was so clear. And see, what I think Saints fans are expecting right now is people to be like, yeah, man, the league did y'all wrong. I don't care who did it. You understand what I'm saying? I don't care who did it. Whoever did it, what needed to be done. That's right. Whoever did it, what needed to be done. That's right. Then it just works out that way sometimes. Saints fans out here, like, they got a petition going around that at the time of this recording has like 600,000 signatures. And I'm like, what are y'all, in eighth grade?
I mean, you created a very strong narrative in the lead up to this game.
Yes.
To the point where the only thing that I could think about after the fact was, whew, we dodged a bullet there.
We sure did. But I'm serious. Like, they said, write this petition. Gabe, when's the last time somebody wrote a petition and anything happened?
Well, actually, as we'll learn about later in the show with the Fyre Festival documentary, there are some petitions that have started. Or do you differentiate petitions from GoFundMe?
Yes, because there's some actual money with a GoFundMe.
Okay,
These people just like, a whole bunch of us is mad. What do you think the NFL going to do? Right? Nothing. Be like, you know what?
Absolutely nothing.
We didn't realize that was a bad call until we saw these petitions, and now suddenly we're going to make some things different. And I mean, I get it. They're really talking about all this in the context of deserve, and I would feel the same way as you guys in the same situation. I need you all to understand that. Your feelings are legitimate, right? Like I talk to the therapist every now and then, and it's very important. She makes this a point that you validate the things that people are saying to you. Everybody wants to feel like they're heard, you know, and I want to make sure that you know that I hear you and you're right. You probably deserve to be in the Super Bowl. But I need you to understand that me hearing you ain't necessarily going to go the way that you want it to go. Because see, something dawned on me about the Saints. Other than Falcons fans, which I'm not, there ain't nobody like really rooting against the Saints. You understand what I mean? Like the Saints are not some big old like national brand. It's not like the Cowboys where you got all these people that's going to be out here rooting against the Cowboys. It's not like the Patriots where you got all these people out here that's going to be rooting against the Patriots. You don't have that circumstance. So like you had Katrina happen in 2005 and then you had the 2016 that went to the NFC championship game. And then they won the Super Bowl in 2009. And I would say that overwhelmingly America was rooting for y'all, right? You know, we could talk one day about the cruel irony about how America rooted more for the football team than America rooted for the actual people, but neither here nor there. America was on your side, right? It's a feel-good story when your boys won the Super Bowl. Yeah, Drew Brees, 4 years earlier, we thought his whole career might have been over, and he became the Drew Brees that he is right now. Like, y'all were a feel-good story, and everybody was rooting for y'all. I get that. And now you are in a similar situation right now where because the call was so bad. I mean, like, there were other calls in the game that were bad, but that call was so bad, right? So with that call being so bad, you are also now again turning and looking to America to be like, yo, they did y'all wrong. You're looking for America to root for you again. And I get it. Again, you've never been in a situation as a Saints fan where America was rooting against you. So you thereby think that everybody is going to look at this situation and be like, hey, y'all got done wrong. You know, especially somebody like me who isn't even a fan of the Falcons. You know, the fans of the Falcons ain't going there for you, but you're looking at me and you're thinking to yourself like, damn, nah, Bomani ain't going to be the one to do us like that. To the hell I'm not. I am exactly the person to do you like that. I hear you and I enjoy it. I love it. I do. I really, really do. But I need you to understand that I hear you and you were done wrong. You appreciate that honesty, Gabe? I'm giving them honesty right now. They were done wrong.
I do. The difficult realization is realizing that you're no longer America's team.
Yeah, well, I think the other difficult realization is there's nothing anybody's going to do about this.
Did you catch yesterday that everybody was coming out and saying, oh, well, if this had, happened to a NFL team where the owner was, you know, a strong kind of political type figure, you know, the NFL, you know, would have hell to pay, that sort of thing. And then I noticed, like, later on in the news, like, the Saints owner was like, oh, you know, we're not having this. We're going to put some pressure on the league to, you know, make some changes about this. So she clearly heard everybody saying she was not going to do anything about it.
Ain't nobody going to listen to her. No disrespect, but they ain't going to listen to her. They wouldn't have listened to Tom Benson. No, I think that argument. So let's say that this had happened to the Steelers, right? There would be hell to pay, but I don't think they would do anything. Does that make sense? Like, I'm trying to remember who it was that I saw that made that point the first time, but I know an example that they brought up was Al Davis. And I'm like, no, they would have rubbed this in Al Davis's face. As Raiders fans, if that's the way they feel, given the Tuck rule, even though the rule is properly applied. There would be hell to pay if this happened to Bob Kraft. I agree with that. There would be hell to pay if this happened to John Mara or, you know, any of these legacy type things. Yeah, I think there's something to that. But there's nothing they could do after it. Like, the game that people are talking about now is, well, we need to make it where pass interference is reviewable. No, you don't. Mm-mm.
So you're a no on that.
I'm 100% no on that. Tell me this. Why would we have that on pass interference rather than, say, holding?
Well, that is a good point. I mean, I guess, like, if you're valuing the passing game over the ground game, it's the same sort of functionality there where you're restricting movement.
Yeah, but
and restricting the outcome of the play.
But holding is crucial for, you know, obviously in the pass also. But my point is, you can call holding on every play.
Yeah.
Right? The other thing on this, and Richard Sherman, I don't know if you saw the tweet he sent about this. He was like, don't say you're making pass interference reviewable. Say you're making defensive pass interference reviewable. Because he's right. Like, do you want to get into a situation where defensive players or defensive teams can now throw the flag and we're going to look at whether or not it's offensive pass interference or not?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. No. This is pass interference is way too much of a judgment call for them to talk about trying to make that reviewable. Now, here's what I think. I think that when people envision pass interference being reviewable, they're thinking about a play as egregious as that one.
Yeah.
But that's not how it's going to be applied. And to be clear, I've never seen a call that egregious. Like, that circumstance is probably never going to happen again because there will probably never be a call ever that was that bad. It was just a bad call. And people think that you can use replay to fix everything, but there's a trade in this specificity. Like, the argument that people make about this, I find very often, is the idea that no matter what, we want to get it right. You absolutely want to get it right, but getting it right is not of paramount significance. It's not the only thing that matters. And getting to these levels of accuracy that people talk about is going to wind up coming with trades that you don't want. Here's the other thing I think you need to keep in mind. Any change that's going to be made to how calls are made, right, how those issues are adjudicated, we got to look at those through a completely different lens as legal gambling approaches. So do you want one of those calls, which I presume would be adjudicated by the league office? Do you want a bang, bang, pass interference call going up to the league office? Now, imagine one of those calls goes to like a team that really matters. Like, it, I mean, it happens now that while the Rams are in Los Angeles, nobody thinks about them in that context. But can you imagine if it were the Patriots and that call was there? And it went, and people would think the fix was in. You know what I mean? Like, all of this is going to come in to us looking at it where they need to just make sure that whether the calls are good, whether the calls are bad, you just need to ensure that people believe that the calls are everybody doing the best they can. I actually think that adding the layer of replay adds more people to potentially think that that's not what's happening, as opposed to more people thinking that it is, again, because this is going up to the home office. I don't like the idea of the home office getting to legislate any of these calls as it is, right? Think about that Eric Reed interception against Philadelphia that was wiped off, that wound up not being an interception. Whatever feelings people had about that or conclusions they may draw, that's affected by the fact that it went all the way up to the league office. Because then you're like, oh, what's going on here, right? The guys that he alleged were colluding against him now make this obvious interception not an interception? No, I'm telling you, y'all don't want that. And Saints fans, I don't even know why you care if they change that rule, right? It ain't going to get y'all in the Super Bowl. And that's what y'all want. Y'all want to be in the Super Bowl. I get it. I understand it. I don't blame you. I would want to be in the Super Bowl if I was y'all too. And if I had as much invested in that team as a lot of y'all got invested in that team, I would probably be just as mad as every one of y'all is. But I am not one of y'all. Therefore, rather than being angry, I am happy. I'm happy that a city got saved. And I'm happy that you're not. Hey, man, we got what I consider to be a great game in the AFC Championship game. Gabe, did you enjoy that one?
I did. I enjoyed Brady just doing it one more time.
Even though he didn't play well.
That's a fair point.
You know, like that's the... I mean, the thing is, it's also bottom line oriented. Like when he got that... when he got the, whatchamacallit, the Super Bowl MVP, when they came back against the Falcons, he didn't play well in that game either. They got to a point where the Falcons defense was just out of gas, but I thought James White should have been the MVP of that game. That wasn't about the greatness of Tom Brady. In fact, I would argue in all the Super Bowls that Tom Brady has played in, maybe the second and third, you could say that he played like well or something in the neighborhood of really well. I don't really remember him playing that well against the Seahawks. I could be wrong, but because I'm going off the top of my head here. But he didn't play well in those games against the Giants. He didn't play well in the first one against the Rams. But it doesn't change the fact that he's the quarterback of these teams that win the Super Bowls, right? Like right now, it is impossible. You could say that there have been better quarterbacks than Tom Brady, like quarterbacks that you think perhaps have played the position better. But given the way that we have described the quarterback position and what matters and all that stuff, like, we're starting the list at number two. You know, like, he is now to quarterbacks like what Jim Brown is to running backs. Like, you can make arguments about other people, certainly, but, I mean, the list starts at number two. He's that guy. But I came out of that game, actually, more than anything. This isn't about, wow, the greatness of Tom Brady and all in this run. This, to me, is the brilliance of Bill Belichick. You know, and it can be difficult to separate what the two of them do because all the success that each has had has been in the presence of the other, right? So it's not really so simple as to be like, well, who gets the credit for this, you know, because we've not really had much of a situation where we've been able to separate them and still see how it goes. Now, that being said, they did have a year without Tom Brady, and while they missed the playoffs, they still went 11-5. You know, so like that's the closest that you really got as the example on this. But to me, go look at that Patriots roster. It is not strong. you know, like go looking up and down and try to find the people that you can name. And a lot of guys on the Patriots actually wind up being overrated. And the reason is they play so many games on television. Like this happens a lot with college basketball, where like for Duke or North Carolina, there's always going to be one dude that winds up being wild overrated, like as a defensive player, because every team has that guy that every team's got to have their, you know, this, he's really provides us good defense and all that stuff. And then that person then gets treated like being way better because they play on TV so much. And then you hear the announcers say this stuff so much. And then it like gets drilled into your head in that way. So there's going to be like Patriot names that come out. Dog. Did you hear Boomer Esiason try to make the argument that we have to talk about Julian Edelman as a Hall of Famer?
I didn't hear the argument, but just on its face,
because you just see him on TV enough and people talk about it enough. Like, y'all know this is one dude that people just call the future Hall of Famer. And there is no plausible argument for him making the Hall of Fame at all. But people say it all the time, and now they say it 17 weeks a year, to where people are just going to believe that that person is a Hall of Famer. Like, that's what happens with a lot of these guys on the Patriots. Well, so a lot of them that you actually, like, think are good might not even actually be that good. We just talk about them enough. Like, on that defense, who are the players? Who do they have that you would count on their defense as a playmaker? Gabe, you got anybody? Because I'm really struggling to think of one.
They've traded all of them away.
Yes.
All gone. I can't even think of one.
And there isn't one that's like come back up. Is Stephon Gilmore their best defensive player?
Yeah, probably.
But I mean, think about what I just said there. Like, not that he isn't good, but I don't feel like you want to come out here and be like, that's the best defensive player that we have. You go back over here on offense, like Sony Michel, I'm a fan. I was a fan of his at Georgia. You know, they got him. Outside of him and Gronk, and even Gronk is kind of on the decline, we'd all agree, in spite of how well he played on Sunday. Who else are we talking about here? They haven't done this with like a Hall of Fame offensive lineman. In fact, let's think about this. In the Patriots run, how many of these guys are ultimately going to make the Hall of Fame? Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Randy Moss is in, but man, is that what we're talking about here? You know what I mean? Willie McGinnis, I suppose. I think like Willie McGinnis will get in, but it'll be a while. You know, like Willie McGinnis is going to get in and you're going to be watching with your kids and they're going to be like, who is Willie McGinnis? Not because Willie McGinnis wasn't good. It's just going to be that long, I think, before Willie McGinnis gets into the Hall of Fame. Can you think of anybody else? Like, are they going to put Richard Seymour in the Hall of Fame? I don't think so. You think Vince Wilfork is going to make the Hall of Fame? I don't think so. Teddy Bruschi, he's not going to make the Hall of Fame. Ty Law, maybe. But even then, Ty Law was gone for this like second half of the run. Like this, they don't have stacked rosters. That's Belichick, man. And yeah, well, I mean, let's be clear. A lot is Brady. Like, I don't want to pretend as though Brady is just some passenger on the ride. Obviously, I said he's going to go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. There's no real argument against it. But even in watching that game, Andy Reid, I think, was somewhat complicit in the outcome of this going against the Chiefs in that they only gave the ball to the running back 10 times, and they just had to do more than that because their offense couldn't stay on the field in the first half, and in the end, the defense just wound up being totally out of gas when they got to the end. They needed some help from their offense to just hold the ball just a little more. But think about this, man. The Chiefs are so loaded. They didn't get much out of Tyreek Hill. They didn't get much out of Travis Kelce. Gabe, Sammy Watkins had 4 catches for 114 yards. Because he's the other guy. Sammy Watkins. He's just some other dude that's on the roster. No, man. Like, this is the brilliance, the unquestionable brilliance of Belichick that gets us to where we are, that gets the Patriots to this place. Now, we go over there and look at the Chiefs and I don't want to be that guy, Gabe. I'm going to be that guy. You know what guy I'm going to be?
Which guy is that?
I'm going to be the guy that reminds you that in his second year in the NFL, Dan Marino threw for 5,084 yards, 48 touchdowns. His team went 15-1. They made it to the Super Bowl. He never went to the Super Bowl again.
Yeah, they were talking on the Barnwell show that I produced. They were talking about that comp yesterday, and it just like rang so true. Like, you never know with these guys. I mean, he could light up the league every single year, but this is no there's no guarantee he's going to make it back.
You can never assume. That's what's so crazy about this thing with the Patriots, is that this is the ninth time in 18 years that they have gone to the Super Bowl. The ninth time in 18 years. That's crazy when you think about Phillip Rivers has never been to a Super Bowl. Now, keep in mind, there's been, I mean, and this happens over all this time. I'm not saying the Patriots are lucky, but the most underrated bad luck play in the history of the NFL postseason is when San Diego looked like it had wrapped up that game against the Patriots with that interception, and then they fumbled it, and the Patriots got it back. The Patriots didn't make the Super Bowl that year, but obviously neither did the Chargers. But we can go through this. Brett Favre made it to the Super Bowl twice. Twice. John Elway, his teams made it to five Super Bowls, but don't forget, they went in 89, and then they didn't make it again until 97, and in 97, they were the underdog. Like, as dope as Mahomes is, and as cool as this thing is that the Chiefs have right now, hey, those defenses in the league are about to start catching up. Now, I would have faith that Andy Reid is going to be a person that can figure out what the next level of adjustment is to make this thing happen. But, no, there's no promise in this. And Mahomes, I thought Mahomes played pretty well considering in that game. Wasn't great, but he didn't turn the ball over. They got some big plays there. Again, Andy Reid can mess around and forget to run the ball, which I just don't see how you do when it's 2 degrees outside. But whatever, it happens. But ain't none of that promise. And that really makes you look at the Patriots and just be like, I salute you. I also, by the way, I don't. Like, do you dislike the Patriots?
I do.
Why do you dislike them?
When you grow up in California, there is a general dislike for New England sports teams. And I realize that is where I currently live. So over the course of the past 5 years since I've lived here, I've gotten to know many a Red Sox and Patriots fan. They're not all bad people. I cannot say that. They are not all bad people. There are some very nice people who are Patriots and Red Sox fans. But growing up in California, you have a certain image of what that person is like, and it's not good.
Yeah, see, I don't dislike the Patriots because, honestly, they don't give us enough to dislike.
Oh, well, I mean, the smugness and just being good, you know, that is enough to dislike.
Yeah, but I mean, but like the players themselves, like the actual guys on and around the team, they don't give us anything.
You can invent stuff.
And that's what I think has happened in large part. Because I just don't think they give us anything. Like, I don't dislike Tom Brady. I think the thing that makes people really dislike Tom Brady is he's pitch perfect in his public humility. Like, Peyton Manning was not. Peyton Manning couldn't help himself with an I told you so if the time came. Tom Brady never wavers. Like, he doesn't slip. And the fact that he doesn't slip, I think, makes it seem a lot less human. But he doesn't really give us anything to dislike either.
He is still smug, though.
I mean, I guess. But what else? Honestly, what else is he supposed to be?
Yeah. I mean, there is also kind of like a too perfectness.
That's what I'm saying. There's another word for this, which is it's a lot of hate.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's a lot of hating. There's kind of no way around that. Now, the people who do love Tom Brady and the Patriots and all that, I think they're a bigger problem than the teams themselves. So, like, Duke, for example, back in the day, I think Duke had easy-to-dislike teams, and they were rooted for by easy-to-dislike people. Now, they have not really easy-to-dislike teams, but they're still being rooted for by easy-to-dislike people. You see what I mean? Like, that's what it is. The Patriots, I think, are now in that space where, you know, they're aight, but, man, the people that are on Team Patriot is not, we don't always get along like that. We don't. But, hey, man, they got the squad. I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl, though.
You don't?
I do not.
Your Team Rams.
I think the Rams are going to win.
Ooh.
I do. I think. I'm not saying it's a blowout. Remember, every Super Bowl the Patriots have been in has been within one score. Every single one. I want to say 6 of the 8 have been within 4 points. So I don't think it's going to be like a huge game in either direction. But I do think that the Rams are going to win. Or maybe I'm just rooting for the following 4 words. Marcus Peters, world champion. All right. Boogie Cousins is back playing for the Warriors. Yeah, they beat the Lakers last night, but Lakers are depleted.
Yeah, I mean, the wheels are falling off this train right now.
I mean, look, one, LeBron's hurt. You know, and you can't get past that point. LeBron's hurt. Lonzo, man, he looked really good in that game right before he got hurt. Was he against the Rockets?
Yeah.
I thought he looked great in that game because I have questioned whether he can be a star. Like, I think he'll be a good player, but I've questioned whether he could be a star. I felt like I was watching a dude that could be a star in that game, and then that ankle injury looked painful. Like, just straight painful. So he's not playing. LeBron wasn't playing. And then last night, you know, thing for the Warriors, I think that is more important than anything else, is that Klay Thompson is hitting threes again. And so with Klay Thompson hitting shots again, now this team is operating at, you know, what it sees itself as being, what it is supposed to be. But I think people believe that Boogie returning is going to be the thing that cures everything for this team. And I just don't see it. I just don't. It might. I worry that Boogie, I mean, this is a dude who's had a usage rate over 30 his whole career. And I think that early, they're going to really not have much of a problem with getting him the ball, you know, getting him comfortable, trying to work him in. He's kind of like the new roommate, you know, and I think they're going to do the things that they can to try to make it better for him in that way. But I don't know how this is ultimately going to shake out. I do not know if in the end he is going to be a very good fit for that team. I do think, though, and perhaps somewhat ironically, he was hitting threes in that first game. Now, granted, they were wide open, but they need another guy that can hit shots because Draymond ain't it. Like, I know Draymond's had a couple good games, but Draymond ain't it. And since Draymond isn't it, it messes their spacing up terribly when Draymond just can't, you know, standing out there and he just can't shoot. You don't need that. So if they had another guy that could stretch the floor and it turned out to be DeMarcus Cousins, then cool. That's what works. You just, I ain't gay, but we betting on the idea that Boogie done turned into a new person.
I mean, I think like over the course of a half season on the floor, which is really what this is going to amount to be, I think like you can cross your fingers and hope that it will be fine, you know, as long as they win the chip, but not going forward after that.
Yeah, no, but I still think that you are adding a really large piece into a puzzle that has already got its own issues. You know what I mean? Like integrating Kevin Durant into this hasn't been easy. I'm just not so sold that it's like, okay, boom, you got Boogie Cousins. Even if it ultimately works, and I think obviously that it could ultimately work, but even if it ultimately works, that's going to take a little bit of time. And, hey, man, that dude is, he be wilding sometime. We agree on that, right?
Yes, yes, we can agree on that. Now, I mean, what are your examples for he be wilding?
He just has a little, he has blow-ups. Yeah, right? Yes. Like, I don't think I have to point to one in particular. He has blow-ups, and he's playing with another guy who also is blow-up prone.
Combustible situation.
Yeah, yeah. Like, again, I think they'll be good. I just don't know why anybody can look at this and simply assume everything's going to be okay. I'm not saying anything is going to be wrong. I'm just saying I could see a lot of things that could be. That's it. But did you see that the Athletic is saying that apparently Kevin Durant and what's his name? Draymond Green, they cool now?
Yeah, I saw that earlier in the week. It's, you know, everything's all good now. They've worked on their differences. I mean, we'll see how things go once it comes to playoff time.
Exactly. Like, I bet they cool right now. But here's my question. Are we operating on the assumption that Kevin Durant just let that stuff slide?
Yeah, I mean, with knowing how petty he is, he's never letting that go.
I don't think he's, I mean, and to be honest, I don't blame him if he didn't. I want to be very clear that if Kevin Durant did not want to let that slide, he's not getting any beef from me about that. I get it if he don't want to let that slide. Draymond was out of pocket. I totally understand if that's the game that he decides he's going to play. I just, you know, it's not going to have me believe. Because remember, Draymond is operating on the premise of it just be like that sometime. Right? Like, is that not how Draymond responded to this when it came up? It was, you know, I went too far, but this is how I am. And this makes every, you know, this makes us good. So this means it's always possible that he might have something else to say like this to Kevin Durant.
Exactly. He's way past apologies. More so just now not having to apologize for his behavior at all. Just get used to it.
Yeah. He's like, my bad, I guess. Like, I guess I understand why y'all tripping. No. Let's see how this ultimately goes. But Boogie is also interesting in this, in that, you know, Boogie, and understandably, I want to be clear that I fully get where he's coming from on this, but Boogie absolutely operates on the he hate me assumption. You know, like he believes that people hate him. And I mean, I totally get it. I fully get it. So you realize, Gabe, we're now adding another person who thinks that people hate him to this team that already thinks that people hate them, except for the fact that he's right. People really do hate him. I feel like his people hate me should make these other guys realize that people don't really hate them. Because think about how happy some people are to see Boogie playing for the Warriors, right? That can only happen because they kind of like the Warriors.
Yeah. And there's also a difference between like, oh, everybody's against us versus everybody's against you.
Yes.
Like as an individual, it's like, no, you know, the Warriors are cool. We just don't like you.
That is a great point because they are against him. I hadn't thought about that yet.
We didn't like you when you're on that team, nor that team. So now you're on the team that's supposedly unlikable. Like, it's not like all of a sudden you just like, you know, halo effect. All of a sudden you just became likable. Like, we still don't like you.
Right. And Kevin Durant, that's like Kevin Durant needs to look at Boogie and be like, okay, maybe they like me a little bit more than I realized. Maybe they do, Kevin.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bumani, this first story comes from Security and Tech.
Hey, I'm Matt Binder with Mashable.com, and I recently came across an interesting story that'll make you take an extra look around that Airbnb next time you're on vacation. A man named Jeffrey Bigham and his family, which includes small children, stayed at a Seattle house they rented over Airbnb during the holiday break. Now, after a day or so of staying there, Jeffrey noticed a security cam perched in the corner of a living area inside the house. He took an extra look around and found a second camera inside the house. Jeffrey immediately unplugged the cameras, checked over the listing, because Airbnb's policies require Airbnb host to disclose the cameras, and he found that the security cameras outside the home, which he knew about, were disclosed, but the ones inside the house were not. Jeffrey immediately contacted Airbnb, expecting that they'd fix the situation. Instead, they pointed out that one of the indoor cameras was visible in the corner of one of the many photos in the listing, and Airbnb considered that disclosure. The host then found out about the ordeal and sent someone to snoop on the family, and in the end, left them a negative review on Airbnb while questioning what the family could have possibly been doing to shut off these security cameras in the first place. Kinda creepy, right? Now, after Jeffrey shared his experience on Twitter, Airbnb reached out to make it right. The company apologized to him, refunded him for his stay, and banned the host. The company also reiterated that hosts must clearly disclose any and all security cameras in writing in their listings. However, though, this isn't the first time security cameras have caused issues with Airbnb users. In fact, the number of cases where users discovered hidden cameras in their Airbnb rentals are what prompted these policies in the first place.
Yo, we've been talking about these cameras, right? Here's what winds up happening, right? And Gabe, you tell me, what you think about this, okay? I understand it's like real security type stuff, and if you got strangers up in your house, you might want to keep an eye on things, right? You feel me?
I do.
That's reasonable to a degree, right? And there are a lot of people that feel that way. But you know what some of those people are? Some of them people are freaks. You feel me? Like, they freaks. And they're going to be trying to see you, you know, because they freaks. And they're going to be up in there watching y'all. Yeah. Yeah, now, like, this is how I feel about it. Hotel don't even put the cameras. Because think about that, right? The hotel. Hotel don't even put the cameras in your room. At least not as far as I know. Like, once you decide you're going to rent out the crib, man, like, you did that. You kind of got to cross your fingers and hope for the best.
There's a reason as to why you have insurance for these things.
Yeah, or maybe it's just not the best idea to rent out your house to strangers.
Yeah, yeah. If you're really concerned about it, concerned enough to feel like you should have cameras, then maybe you shouldn't do it, right?
Yeah, and I know. And look, I know people don't want to get robbed, right? People don't want to get got. I get all of that. But maybe, just maybe, this ain't for you.
Yeah.
And this is how far you have to go.
Yeah, and it can be both ways, too. I mean, like, I stay at Airbnbs all the time when I'm on vacation. But would I want somebody up in my house? No.
I don't do Airbnb.
You do not?
I don't do Airbnb.
Well, I mean, you're also of a certain strata.
Yeah, you're right.
Of a certain level where you can enjoy the finer things.
You are 100% correct. I was about to say, a big part of that is I ain't sweating room service no more. Since I ain't sweating room service no more, that means I get it. I order it. Like, I like to leave and come back and my bed be made up for me. All right, I really don't feel like paying to make up my own bed. Not on vacation. Nah, people are like, yeah, you can get out here, live among the people. You can go to the grocery store and you can cook yourself. I don't be feeling like cooking at home. Now, again, I'm speaking with my privilege.
Yes.
However, I feel pretty confident that them fancy hotels is not spying on me. Y'all out here renting from freaks.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's an extra level to it where people could be renting out their place just so that they could spy on people.
Just to be freaks.
Yeah.
That's right. You hadn't thought about that, had you?
I hadn't. I just made that connection right now.
Mm-hmm. Freaks.
Oh, boy. Next story coming from tech.
My name is Peter Hawley, and I'm a reporter covering technology at The Washington Post. My latest story is about a robot named Marty. He looks like a 7-foot-tall Pez dispenser. He's gray-colored, and he has big, goofy, cartoonish eyes, and he's being placed in hundreds of grocery stores along the East Coast. Marty is an autonomous robot, and his job is to move around the store using image capturing technology to look for spills. Once he sees a spill, he alerts employees. Last week, giant food stores announced that they were going to be placing 172 Martys in grocery stores across Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia. Besides flagging spills, Marty also does price checks, meaning he can find discrepancies between prices that are on the shelf and in the store's scanning system. On its surface, Marty looks and sounds pretty harmless, but not everybody feels that way. Marty is equipped with 8 cameras in total, and when the machine takes a photo of a spill, those images are sent to humans working in a control center in the Philippines who review the images and then trigger a cleanup message over a loudspeaker inside the store. If the idea of an autonomous machine taking data from inside your local grocery store and sending it across the globe doesn't bother you, perhaps this will. A union representing grocery workers called the expansion of automation in grocery stores a direct threat to millions of American workers. That group, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, said they'd be keeping an eye on Marty. Of course, Marty will be watching them as well. The robot army of Martys will be fully deployed in about 6 months.
So isn't that kind of like the elf on the shelf? Except the elf, like, calls the cleaning crew.
The elf on the shelf?
The elf on the you're not up on the elf on the shelf?
No, when I think of the elf on the shelf, I think of the mensch on the bench.
Oh, no. The elf on the shelf is the proliferation of the surveillance state via Christmas tradition, which I guess you can make the argument about Santa Claus because he know everything you're doing. But people, when they got these kids, cover your kids' ears if they listening in the car or whatever. But they put the elf on the shelf, and the elf be watching the kids. And so you know, stop them from, like, doing stuff they're not supposed to do because the elf on the shelf watching them. And so basically the grocery stores put some elves on the shelves to be watching, and then they deploy people out to clean up. And I just don't So here's what I find strange about this, and you let me know if I'm the one that's tripping. I feel like it don't take that long for the grocery store to realize something got spilled. Like, how much of an improvement is this really? Like, what are they doing that people can't do? Like, I don't even look at this as a situation of they gonna put people out of work, because it almost might make the people's job a little bit easier. Now they don't have to look for spills, but it ain't gonna deploy a robot to clean it up, is it?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
That's not what I gathered.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a little scary because robots and stuff like that. I just feel like this is somebody working too hard to create a robot. I'm like, maybe this robot was meant to do something far more dastardly and that didn't work and they had to scale it down while they figure out the kinks, because this seems useless.
Now, here's the question. What moves faster in the store, a big robot or a person?
Good question. And again, keep in mind, the robot going to have to tell people anyway.
Yes, because ultimately, like, scanning around for spills, the robot's going to have to be going up and down the aisles. It's not like the robot's going to be stationary. So that's exactly what the human's doing.
Yeah, they said right? That when the robot hears about a spill, it's going to say it over the loudspeaker, which I'm assuming is for people.
Yeah, I'm not sure I see the upside here.
I'm telling you, it's a con. Seems... It's a con. That robot is going to be not long before that robot doing things you ain't asked that robot to do. You know why?
Why?
Sometimes robots is some freaks.
What is the robot going to be doing in the store?
Just saying, sometimes they're some freaks.
Oh, man. All right, this last story comes from TV and Entertainment.
I'm Sam Adams, the senior editor at Slate. 2 years ago, the Fyre Festival was a luxury music festival turned spectator sport. Now it's a documentary. Actually, two of them. Fyre Fest, which made a surprise debut on Hulu last week, essentially blames millennials for the Fyre debacle. They're the Instagram influencers who hyped it, and the rich kids who bought tickets to what turned out to be an unmitigated disaster, leaving guests stranded on a remote island with FEMA tents to sleep in and cheese sandwiches to eat. This is what happens if you value what the movie calls the performance of an attractive life over the real thing, and the ability to create the appearance of success over a workable plan. Fyre, which is now on Netflix, focuses on the people who thought they were making the Fyre Festival happen. The music bookers and event promoters who believed in Fyre founder Billy McFarland's vision, even as the signs of imminent collapse piled up. McFarland is now serving a 6-year sentence for fraud. The movie goes too easy on the festival's marketers, perhaps not surprising since they produced it, but it's full of astonishing moments, like when one of McFarland's collaborators explains how he was fully ready to perform a sex act on a government official in order to help get a shipment of spring water through customs. Neither movie reckons with the idea that even if the Fyre Festival had gone off as planned, it wouldn't have amounted to much. They talk as if they were planning the next Woodstock, when what they were really offering was the chance to ride jet skis with supermodels and take a selfie with Ja Rule. For my money, Netflix's Fyre is the better documentary. It's unquestionably better made and asks questions rather than feeding you answers. But who am I kidding? If you watch one, you'll immediately feel the need to see the other. That's how they get you.
All right. I watched the Netflix one. Gabe, did you watch them both?
I just watched the Netflix one.
Okay. I watched the Netflix one. And I did find that in the end, they tried to tie this in with this overarching message of the millennials and of the Instagram culture, and that was what the problem was in this. And I find that whole notion to be ridiculous.
Yeah, they were cautioning the quote-unquote influencers. Oh, you got to be careful about what you're signing up for and what you're posting.
Yeah, and you know, and I think there's something to that, right? But this was just a scam. Like, scams are as old as time. They use the tools of the day in order to propagate the scam. But this would be no different than if somebody printed a pamphlet and had described this stuff with photographs, and then it turned out to be a scam. Like, there isn't, like, to me, with Fyre Fest, there is no big, large moral of the story here, right? There's no, like, finger to wag at, and this is what's wrong with us. Nah, man. This dude, who, by the way, had a brilliant idea for his actual business, then tried to attach it to a music festival, and his ambitions outpaced what he could actually pull off. And then it turned into a scam, because at no point could he turn around and just say, yo, this is too much. I can't make it happen. That's it. But this is like, I have been bothered in seeing the people who use this as some opportunity to slam the millennials because they care more about what's on the surface than what's underneath. It was a music festival. Like, people act like they ain't never bought nothing based on a commercial. What Fyre Fest did was took a dope commercial, right? Because I ain't going to lie. If I had known about that, I would have wanted to go. You see how pretty that water was?
I know. It looked gorgeous.
Right. Jeez. Like if you could imagine going and kicking it there, and if there was some music that you actually wanted to hear, man, that thing looked dope. No, what happened was this dude whose business partner was Ja Rule ran a scam. And let me tell you, by the way, right now, when people should have known that this was a scam. Because I didn't feel like the Netflix documentary answered this one. How come Ja Rule wasn't one of the performers? Right? Like this is your thing. You're in on it. Y'all know y'all got some money problems. Why can't you do them a solid and perform?
I love that that was your moment when people should have realized it was a scam.
Yeah, looking back on it, right? Like, it's like when you go back and watch The Usual Suspects, there's a bunch of giveaways along the way. But the fact that Ja Rule is a rapper, this was a music festival, and he was not listed as one of the performers. And you can't say that that's just because he's old, because Blink 182 was supposed to be there.
I know. God damn.
Yeah, that's
Blink
what I'm
182?
Saying. Yeah, like they're of a similar generation as Ja Rule. Yeah, no. Once Ja Rule wasn't going to be performing in it, that was the sign. And the dude on the phone call, he mentioned the sex act. And I know that some of y'all have not seen the documentary, okay? And if you have not seen the documentary, I need you to put this on mute. I'm a tell you exactly how long to be on mute, then you can come back so the rest of us can talk about this, okay? Stay on mute for 1 minute. Go. All right. So that dude really said that Billy dude told him that since he was gay, they had decided that he would be the one to go perform a sex act on the dude at customs so they could get some bottled water in for the festival. Now, please understand, this was not going to save the festival, okay? The festival had no chance. This was just going to stop it from dying that day. But that was not going to save the festival. And this, they told this man, since you're gay, you got to be the one to take this one for the team. And what did that dude do? He said he went home. He took a shower. He used mouthwash. Like, he got himself right to go over there. By the way, if you are back after that 1 minute, go away again. Give me another minute. Sorry about that. So he had gotten himself right to go over there and do this. What? for this? For something that was going to fail? And honestly, this is what that man should have said. He should have been like, Billy, I'm a little bit confused here. I understand, you know, that I'm gay, but being gay doesn't make you the only person in this operation with a mouth. Right? Like, you can do this if it's that damn important. You have all the necessary equipment to make this happen if it's that important. Instead, that dude went and took a shower and was set to go. You must be out of your damn mind. All right. Welcome back to everybody that went away. All right. So we are recording this on Tuesday. That would be January the 22nd. Yeah, that sounds close enough. Yeah, phone says 22nd. Okay. The Martin Luther King holiday was yesterday, and every year when the holiday comes around, I like to talk a little bit about Dr. King because I really, when you look at who all the people are that send out Martin Luther King commemorative tweets, you realize how all over the place this whole thing is with Martin Luther King and how few people actually get this. I don't try to encapsulate the whole time of Martin Luther King all at once. I do not try to educate you on everything. I can tell you that I would recommend the King Estate. King did not write a formal autobiography in his life, but the King Estate commissioned, I think it's I think it's Claiborne Carson as his name, but he's a professor at Stanford. But anyway, he has compiled King's papers into what is an autobiography of sorts. I recommend that you check it out. I think it's good, and I think it helps you. The thing about King and what makes it so offensive when people manipulate his words is that no one has ever written with greater clarity. No one has ever expressed his views more clearly than King did. No one did. There is no way that you, with any level of sincerity, can harvest a quote from Martin Luther King and use it for any purpose other than the purpose that he himself intended. That's it. There's none. And I believe the King is the finest man that this country has ever produced. And a big part of why I believe the King is the finest man that this country has ever produced, and a big part of why I always make it a point to mention that, is his cause was one that in his time was totally uncorrupted by commerce. Like, the man wasn't perfect, because nobody is. That's not how the game goes. But the revolutionary that you want people to be very often, which is the one who basically does this at a vow of poverty, that is what you got with this man. The tireless work to the point of his own basically depression. King in the Wilderness, I recommend you check it out. It's an HBO documentary that talks about King toward the later years, and talks about King when he was in Chicago. And you see the toll that it took on him, because you don't hear as much. You hear a lot of discussion about what King did in the South. You don't hear a lot of talk about what King did up North. You don't hear a lot of talk about King in Chicago. See, the thing about it is, you talk about King down South, you can claim some victories. You know, you claim the segregation ended. We started dismantling Jim Crow and all of that stuff. You can do that. You start talking about King in Chicago, you start talking about the overwhelming machine that he was fighting against and how dedicated they were to the fight against him. And you do not have what many of you would consider to be backward Southerners in your mind that you can blame all of this on. But that man ain't back down. That man ain't back down on nothing. And if you really want to try to say that you have incorporated the principles of Martin Luther King's life into your own, I really think you yourself need to ask, do you actually know what King's principles are? And which of them are you actually putting into your own life? And I'm not saying this really as a judgment, because I can see how it is, you know, the way that we handle King and his image, that it would be very easy for you to think that you knew and you did not. You know, we have very much so sanitized the image of him. Basically, it got to a point where this dude was so cold that this country had to look at him and be like, OK, we really kind of do need to give him a holiday. You know, the black people would like it. And like, this dude was the real deal, like in a very undeniable sort of way. They're like, yo, this dude was the real deal. But the reality is, if you're going to give somebody a holiday, you either have to like all the way love that person, or all the way love whatever was his cause or what he stood for. So you take a dude like Christopher Columbus. I don't think people have no real emotion. Like, we got Columbus Day. Nobody got no real emotional attachment to Christopher Columbus. But the cause in that case is America, and they got a love for America, right? Like, it's like, hey, he quote unquote found this thing we live on. So it goes from there. With King, you either got to have some for real deal love for King, or so for real deal love for what King was fighting for. And the thing is, what King was fighting for ultimately is a dismantling of what was, and kind of sort of still is, the status quo on matters of race and class. Like, how many people are really about that? You know? And so that's how you wind up in these places where you look up and you see like these different political groups and teams and everybody else just trying to find some way to get in on what it is with King, because they know that the dude's the truth. They know that that is the side of right. That don't mean they down for it. So they want to align themselves with it without aligning themselves with what is underneath, without aligning themselves with the cause. That is what they want to do. That's what everybody wants to do with King. Because if you start actually talking about King's words, you start like going through the whole I Have a Dream speech, it's amazing how that has been manipulated, then it goes a lot harder than I think people realize. And I think people want to say, like, I get so annoyed when people start talking this stuff about Malcolm Jenkins and Colin Kaepernick, and they're like Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X. Malcolm Jenkins is no Martin Luther King. And I mean that in the sense of what Malcolm Jenkins was trying to do. They're not coming from the same place. Not that Jenkins is like an enemy of King or anything like that, but they're not coming from the same place. They're not doing the same thing. That's not what it is. Like, that man stood up. You remember, King died when he was 39. Like, dude ain't even make it to 40 and accomplished that much and stood up to that much and fought that strong and fought that tall and had that many grown-ups. Don't forget that part. How many full-on adults stood behind him, a man of his age? That is crazy impressive. Crazy impressive. And for me, honestly, it's too impressive for people to fake the funk if they're going to say that they with it. Because the truth is, if as many people was with it as they say about Martin Luther King, things wouldn't look like they do. It's not possible. It can't be. It's not. And I ask you just to remember this, historically, when you think about Martin Luther King, as you know, we see the way that people handle it. Remember this. When President Obama was inaugurated the second time, he put his hand on King's Bible. That infuriated me. And the reason why it infuriated me, a political observation, by the way, the reason that that infuriated me was I remembered in his speech of accepting the Democratic nomination, which I believe was on the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. He made reference to a preacher from Georgia or a preacher from Atlanta, something like that. Couldn't say his name. Could not say his name. Because as much as we like to say we love Martin Luther King on some days, the mere mention of his name is deemed a little too polarizing for that man in that place to say out loud. And then, as I recall, the speech ended and they played country music. Don't everybody love that man like they say they do? And I encourage you to read and find out why, because it is possible it might actually make you love him more. All right, but ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to Hims, our sponsor. Also, thanks to our contributors for If You Haven't Heard. Thank you to Matt Bender of Mashable. He is the host of the aptly named podcast Doomed. We may need to have him on our show a little bit more, but you can check his story about guests finding hidden cameras in their Airbnb apartments. Thanks to The Right Time, If You Haven't Heard, all-star Peter Holly of the Innovations blog at the Washington Post. Check out his story about robots working in the grocery stores. And thank you to Sam Adams of Slate.com. Check out his blog at Slate called Browbeat. Check out his review of the two Firefest documentaries. Subscribe to The Right Time. Catch us at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We'd appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.